Happy to check back with Quincy City Council President Nina Liang for an update on the Ides of March City Council meeting. Hey, Nina.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks for spending some time. Appreciate it. And you're still doing COVID-19 heroes, so there must be just an endless list of them, I guess.
You know, it's ongoing, obviously, as we are still currently in the midst of the pandemic, and now with the vaccine rollout, there are certainly more COVID-19 heroes to come.
Okay, who was the very latest one?
So yesterday, Councilor Andronico brought in the Quincy Public Schools Nutrition Department. It's, for me, something that was really timely to see them come on, because I don't know if you saw or heard, Joe, but, you know, there was that horrific story about the 9-year-old girl who, during a, not in Quincy, but I forgot which state it was in, during one of her classes on Zoom, just broke down crying, saying how hungry she was. And it just, you know, that... I think the pandemic has been a challenge for each of us in its own ways. And, you know, not one single person's experiences diminish another person's struggles, right? But when you see and hear something like that, it breaks your heart, you know, and it makes you wonder. And I think it makes folks like us wonder, oh my God, what can we do, right? What can we do to try to make sure that doesn't happen? And what can we do to try to fix or help? And, you know, so when Councilor Andronico brought this team from the Quincy Public Schools in front of us to highlight some of the work that they've been doing to make sure that we're addressing any food insecurity here in this city, making sure that students here don't go without. I mean, it's just, it's very encouraging. And it's I think for us, instills that confidence that we have in the systems in place we have here in the community members, right? I mean, it's, this past year has been such a struggle, again, for so many, but particularly I think for students too of all ages, with the different challenges of online learning, and people I think sometimes forget that we do have a segment of the population that relied on going into school in person, you know, for their meals, for food. And so, you know, the schools, superintendent, the teachers, you know, school committee members, they had to think about how do we shift the actual learning process online, but to then also keep front of mind and prioritize how can we also make sure to, you know, keep up with the services that these kids need as well, I think is just tremendous. So it was a really good opportunity to pause and thank them for the work that they've done.
It's great. I mean, I remember back in the summertime, they quickly, you know, shifted to a pickup program where anybody could come by and get meals every single day. And then they expanded those locations to schools, you know, all over the city, and really kept up with the demand all through this pandemic. And you're right. The school is much more than just a building where kids go to learn. It can be, you know, their social activity of the day. It can be a safe harbor from a dangerous situation at home. You just don't know. So it's more than just bricks and mortar, for sure.
You're exactly right. And I think at this time, especially when, you know, the governor is talking about opening the schools back up and bringing the teachers back, and the focus is about making sure that it's safe and, you know, teachers are getting vaccinated, you know, to again, sort of pause and shift over and say, okay, but to your point, Joe, what else does being in a school building mean for these students, you know, and this is, you know, one part of that.
Yeah. Nice to honor them, for sure. And yeah. There'll be more in the future. Is that right?
Yes. Still more to come. We're still going to, I mean, when Councilor Pamucci first introduced this, when we came back in the fall session, you know, I just think it was such a great idea to, in that moment, again, pause and be able to just highlight and thank the people who've been, you know, working nonstop this last year to make sure that city services are continuing, to make sure that we're continuing to provide, you know, food for our students, making sure that we're getting folks vaccinated, getting folks tested. And again, it's just to be able to keep doing that every council meeting, right? Just pause before we get into business to just say thank you, you know, from all of us. I mean, you know, each of the councilors, yes, we have a legislative role, but, you know, we prioritize constituent services, right? And so in the last year, with the constituent service requests that we've been getting and trying to help residents, it's a team effort in this community, you know? So for, again, us to be able to pause and actually say thank you, that's it's a really nice opportunity for us to do that.
Yeah, nice. All right, let's get down to a little bit of business. Finance Committee, I know, talked a little bit more about the public safety complex. How'd that discussion go?
It was a good introductory conversation, I would have to say. I mean, you know, this certainly isn't the first time we've heard about the public safety headquarters being introduced to us, but this is now the ask of, okay, we have the plans, we have the design. So this was what I mean to say with introductory presentation is it's the introductory presentation of the final package, right? We have had ongoing conversations over the last few years about the concept of, you know, a central public safety headquarters. Of course, we want our first responders to have the best to operate with, to serve all of us as residents of the city. And as residents are familiar with when they drive by that area, you know, the police station is in serious need of upgrades. You know, the fire station is not centrally located with the police station. And so it's just, as a city grows, to be able to have an updated safety complex for our first responders, again, to best serve the city and the residents, is very important. And so, again, this has been a long process, a very long proposal in the making, quite a number of people involved with putting this package together in front of us, but it still, again, comes with a lot of questions, right? And this is an opportunity for the council to have that first conversation within committee about that final package, you know, go over some details, and then, you know, ask some questions that we're going to get some follow-up on at the following meeting to come.
What are some of your concerns, your questions about it, Nina?
I mean, so this is a $120 million ask. It's $120 million. It's a lot of, it's a lot of money. And so that's a concern that we all share. But again, I think that it's safe to say that we all also share the understanding that we do want to provide the best, again, for our first responders, right? And so those are two things that we do need to make sure we're balancing well in this conversation and as we're reviewing this information. But for me, you know, I come from a background working with my cousins where, you know, they did it all, soup to nuts, right? With looking at a location, outfitting that location, and budgeting for everything from, you know, the hinges on a certain door to the finishes of the concrete, to the paint and to the wood and to the wallpaper, to the banquette seating. I mean, all of it. And so I approach this project with that same mindset. And when I look and I see, you know, through this proposal, the breakdown of each of those items, which again, it's incredibly thorough. I mean, it's a very thick packet of information in here. You know, it has that kind of line item breakdown, you know, how many refrigerators in certain areas and break rooms, right? How much concrete needs to be poured, how much paint needs to be bought for the painting of, you know, the parking spaces, right? Again, how many hinges do we need for these aluminum doors? And for me, it's looking at, okay, what company is it that we worked with, and it's PM&C that actually put this together, but what's their experience, right? Who are they? How do we get to them? You know, what experience do they have in outfitting a project this large as far as what their vision is, and then working their way in on exactly what is needed to build this building, right? How many doors? And again, how many hinges on a certain door? And I just want to know their background in coming into it for the proposal they put in front of us. But I'm also curious as to what vendors they're working from, right? You can buy, and I made this comparison last night at the council meeting, you can buy an SUV from BMW or you can buy an SUV from Kia. They both can be great quality, but one costs significantly more than the other, you know? So those are the kinds of things that I always approach these proposals with that kind of a lens is, you know, looking at that and saying, you know, do we need a $1,000 microwave, right? Which is actually in here. And I don't know, again, because I don't know the specifics of that microwave that they're proposing in here, right? So those are things that I want to look at is, you know, if you are proposing certain types of paint or certain types of, fabrics for certain areas and seating and benches and wood and the types of doors that they need and all of that, I just want to have an understanding of what vendor we're getting this quote from. And specifically, why are we going with that product over another, right? Do we jeopardize quality? Is that why we're spending a little bit more? Or can we get the same quality with maybe a different vendor, a new vendor maybe even for less, you know, because it does add up, right? Yes, there might be, you know, one $150 clock, and cutting $150 from a $120 million may not seem like much, but it adds up, you know? So for me, that's one of the biggest concerns when I was looking through this proposal is just, I need more information, right, on these numbers, because again, it's a very detailed proposal in here with each of those line items and the quantity of those line items, but I need a better understanding of how we got to those numbers and again, which vendors we're using with those price points.
Okay. So how was it left? Where does it go to now?
Well, so all of my counselors, they all had, you know, similar concerns as far as pricing things out. There were concerns about the floodplains and making sure that as we're building out this new complex, we're keeping that in mind. But again, that does attribute to the cost. And so each of them had questions relative to what the cost of certain items are, and then making sure that, you know, what we're spending is going to produce the product that we want to see, right? We want to see a product that will last, you know, hopefully after all of us are here, right?
Right.
And there's a lot of questions that they had that we still need answers to. And so before we can move on anything, all of us need to make sure we get those answers. And we're hoping that at the next meeting, which will be another finance committee meeting prior to the city council meeting on Monday, I believe it's April 5th. Yes, Monday, April 5th. We're hoping to get some more answers to these questions.
Okay. Yeah. It's like you say, it's probably the biggest spending project that the city will undertake in recent history. So any yes. timeline in mind right now for when there would be a vote?
I do not know. Again, it's really dependent on the questions that the other eight counselors have, right? Myself, if we get the answers to our questions and we can get to a number that we're all, you know, in agreement on, that works for the project and the product we want to, you know, actually get in the end, and we can all come to an agreement on that, then great, you know. But again, I just, from the conversation last night, I can see and hear from my colleagues as well that we all, you know, again, we want to have the best product for our first responders. We are also responsible for, you know, the taxpayers and responsible to the taxpayers of this city. And that's something that's very front of mind for my colleagues. So, you know, it's, I can't say if and when they'll be comfortable with it. I just know that they have concerns. I want to make sure that they get the answers to their concerns before we move forward.
Okay. I noticed too, it states that it's also for area transportation improvements. Does that mean traffic improvements in that area?
That's correct. And you know, some of my colleagues brought up the traffic concerns and the congestions and the pedestrian safety in that area. And that's something that we want to be very mindful of as well.
Yeah, it's a major issue right now. I can't imagine, you know, adding a big construction project. So that has to be part of the whole picture, I'm sure.
100%. And it's after the fact too, right? I mean, that area, we want it to be, I mean, it's so close to the center itself where you are, you know, and it's definitely within walking distance, right? And so let's find a way to connect that. But we need to make sure that if we do so, it's pedestrian friendly, you know, and we need to make sure that the traffic congestion is addressed as well. And it's a major, major intersection, right? And so those are things that need to be looked at as well.
Sure. And while you're doing that, there's a new request, $23 million for Quincy College. What happened with that?
Yes, that went into Finance and Oversight Committee, again, for discussion and before we move forward on it. You know, with these items, that's what happens is, you know, when they get introduced to the city council at our meetings as a whole, and then our committees are built out to have directed specific conversations around items like this. And so this, because it's a monetary ask, went into finance. And then it also got a dual reference to oversight committee because mm-hmm. there were some questions, as you recall from last budget season, around the college itself and the finances of the college. And so those are two pieces of the puzzle that I think are important to have conversations around. So we'll have a finance and an oversight committee meeting to be able to have an evening to discuss this more in depth.
Okay. How do you feel about this idea, Nina?
Personally, I'm concerned. I have the utmost respect for the mayor. I think that, you know, the vision that he has for the city and for the downtown is one that, you know, is going to revive the downtown area, right? And really have that impact ripple out to the rest of the city as well with, you know, making sure that we have expanded sidewalks for our business owners, making sure that it's pedestrian friendly, right? Making sure that people who invest in the city can see the return on their investments. And so I believe that his vision has that very front of mind. But like I had just mentioned earlier, you know, it's our responsibility to be fiscally responsible in answering to the residents, right? Ourselves as taxpayers here. And so every monetary ask that comes in, we need to make sure that we have that lens as we're looking at it. And this last year in particular, you know, with so many unknowns, I mean, I think for the first 8, maybe 9 months I was talking to you, I feel like we both started every conversation with who knows, you know, who knows what's going to happen with the pandemic and who knows what's going to happen with the state of the world and the state of the city and all of this. And so I feel like, yes, while there is vaccines going out and we're starting to finally come around the bend, we still need to have a full, clear understanding of the financial impact that this pandemic has had. And even outside of that, even if there wasn't a pandemic, mm-hmm. right? Let me pull that back. Even if there wasn't a pandemic, every time there's a monetary ask of this size coming in front of us, you know, we need to take that and we do take that very seriously, right? And so it's not a knock on the project itself. It's more of we need to be fiscally responsible. And that is something that we take very seriously, you know, on the council. So, you know, I looked at the average, you know, bond that over the last 20 years that we take out. And on average, I mean, some years, obviously there's low ends and high ends, but on average, we bond at about $9 to $10 million a year. And so just with these two alone last night, I mean, $120 million for this project, $20 million for this, that's what, $140 million just in one night of requests. And so that's the financial piece of it's concerning to me.
Yeah. Sure. And then there's another $450 million coming possibly for the pension liability that may be asked for in the future. So there's a lot coming up on the table for sure.
Yeah, and there's a lot to weigh when it comes to those things, right? Again, it's not to say that we don't want a good and updated public safety headquarters for our first responders. Of course we do. It's not that we don't want to have a college that serves those who are, I think, are most in need. You know, a good friend of mine, one of my closest friends, was able to, as a working mom of two, go back to school full time and get her degree because of Quincy College. And so I know that these things have value, yeah. You know, and they serve people in the community that we want to serve, that we strive to serve. But again, for us, it's deeply important that we keep front of mind the financial impact of these projects. So, you know, again, we have these committee meetings to have these in-depth conversations, particularly around a topic, and that's what we'll be doing. And we'll see once we start diving into that conversation, how it goes.
Okay. One bit of good news, of course, you were there at City Hall when Congressman Lynch announced the city getting a little over $46 million in the American Rescue Plan. So how do you feel about that?
I feel great.
I think he said that Nina already had it spent.
Ah, he's funny. No, I mean, Congressman Lynch was there, yes, and Speaker Ron Mariano was there as well. And the mayor had spoken about sort of some of the things that we want to make sure we're prioritizing here in the city, between residents and business owners, and making sure that, again, you know, we can support our local economy here. I mean, it's just fantastic, you know, Joe, and you have to sort of pause in those moments when you see the power and the weight of the leadership that we have here in the city. You know, we're supported by folks who keep Quincy very front of mind. And these are, you know, Congressman Lynch, Speaker Mariano, they represent other areas outside of Quincy, you know, but they are so invested in making sure that the residents and the business owners here, everyone that is here in this city, that we, you know, get what it is that we need to sustain ourselves, right? And so to have Congressman Lynch come here yesterday and talk about, you know, the relief package that's going to come and what that means, right, for the economy here in this city is just so encouraging. And it was a really powerful moment, I think, for me personally to see, you know, again, the weight of the folks that we have in the room, and the resources that they can provide. They truly deeply care about this city and the people who live here and trying to get us through this pandemic, you know.
Does it pay for what has cost the city for the pandemic? Does that $46 million cover it, do you know?
I'm not sure if it's going to. So because of the expenses that we've already had in the last year, we've already submitted for the money to get reimbursed for that. And so my understanding of it is that this would be funds that we use moving forward, right? It's sort of like a look ahead that we're using this funding for, right? Because again, we just don't know what the impact will be. And then we don't know when this will be over and that will have a continued impact. And so we need to be really strategic about how we're using these funds moving forward as well. And making sure that we're creating that cushion for ourselves, because like I had mentioned earlier, even though the vaccine process is starting now, that doesn't mean that everything's going to go back to what it was pre-pandemic. I stopped using the term normal because I feel like this is our new normal now. But do you know what I mean, Joe? Like we don't know. We don't know what that impact is going to be yet until we fully, I think, come around the corner on the other side of this.
Yeah. Speaking of vaccines, I know you got an update from the administration on helping out our senior citizens here in the city.
Yes. So Councillor Andronico, who represents now the Thousand Southern Arter area in Ward 2, wanted to make sure that because they are privately owned, you know, senior housing building, that they are getting vaccinated, right? That there are vaccine programs set up in place. And so Mr. Walker from the administration had walked us through you know, the partnership that's going to happen now to actually set up the vaccine program, and that's taking place this Thursday and Friday. And so it's tough, right? I mean, they live in close quarters with one another. They haven't been able to leave, the majority of them, you know, and we want to make sure that as the most vulnerable, they are getting vaccinated. We have an incredible program set up through Cynthia over at Manet Health, and they've been doing a phenomenal job with getting residents here in Quincy to not have to travel to Gillette or to Greenfield now that they're doing vaccines in Greenfield, or even Fenway, and now they're moving Fenway as well. So, you know, Manet's been doing a phenomenal job for residents here in the city, but, you know, we need to make sure that we're also getting to those who can't come to us, you know, and that's, again, part of what this program is going to be. You know, there was also an update that I was, you know, super thrilled to share, which was that the Quincy Housing Authority owned senior buildings were vaccinated all in the last 2 weeks. And that was an effort spearheaded by Judy Morris over at the Quincy Housing Authority. She, you know, James Marathis, who's the head of the director of the Housing Authority, called and let us know that he was able to create a partnership with Stop and Shop Pharmacy to actually administer vaccines as a clinic. And so then Judy Morris called and said, okay, we got these vaccines, let's execute the program. And it was, I mean, an insane process. Within a very short period of time, we were able to work with community leaders like ACDC, which is Asian Community Development Corporation, Mai Du, who's head of Walloon Kung Fu and Tai Chi Academy. We had Boston Chinatown Neighborhood Center. They turned around translations of the disclaimer forms that they needed to sign up to actually get the vaccines. And then, you know, Judy went and turned around 26,000 copies of that, distributed it to each of the residents in our senior buildings, you know, making sure that they got the forms, they knew how to sign up for the vaccine, collected all of those back. We got the vaccines in place. And then in coordination with the with Sheriff Patrick McDermott's department, as well as Speaker Ron Mariano, we got teams of just volunteers and translators coming and saying, okay, each day, we're going to make sure we're running this clinic and making sure that all of these residents get their shots. And it was, I mean, certainly by the last clinic, you know, it ran really smoothly. But what we noticed is that folks would come down from their unit and say, I didn't get the form, or I didn't know about the signup program. What happened? Because look, just like all of us, sometimes we get 50 things in the mail that most of it's spam and sometimes you miss it. And so, you know, to have those volunteers there to make sure that we were able to get all of the residents vaccinated, make sure that if we missed anybody, we were able to call them, track them down, make sure that they came to the community rooms to get vaccinated, answered any questions that they might have had about the vaccine. We had some folks, understandably, that came to get vaccinated and were really concerned based off of their age, based off of underlying conditions, were visibly shaken and saying, mm-hmm. I know I need to get this, but I'm not sure. And so again, just the volunteers and the team that came together to do it the last 2 weeks, I'm just so grateful to them. We vaccinated over 1,000 residents in the senior buildings across the city the last 2 weeks. So they did a phenomenal job. There's still obviously more to come with making sure we get folks in Thousand Southern Artery as well, but we just need to keep on with the effort and try to get everybody vaccinated.
It's a great story. It really is. I had a chance to chat with Mr. Marathis about it, and he is just over the moon excited that it was able to happen. And I know down in Hingham as well, they oversee the Hingham Housing Authority too. So he's
correct. Working. And then I believe Marshfield as well.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a great story. It really is to, as you say, one of the most vulnerable populations. So it's just, you know, another step closer to the new normal, as you say.
Right. We're getting there slowly but surely.
Yeah. Anything else at the meeting, Nina?
I'm trying to think. Oh, so we had one of the items that was when we had spoken last that was objected to the previous council meeting. As you know, any item that gets an objection when it gets introduced to the council gets tabled and moved to the following council meeting. So we did have an item that was objected to at the previous council meeting, and then it was brought up at this council meeting last night, and it was passed, and it was the renaming of the later end of Glover, over North Quincy, Glover Avenue, up in North Quincy in front of the Sacred Heart Church, to Father Huey Way. And so that was passed last night as well. And that was the only other item that was outstanding. Oh, I'm sorry. How could I forget? Of course, there was also a report out of the committee. So when our committees meet, they have these conversations about specific items. And then if it gets voted out of committee or referred out of committee, it moves back into the regular, you know, city council for an actual final vote. And mm-hmm. So Airbnb, if you remember, was discussed in committee and moved out of committee. And it sort of sits in this weird limbo before anything happens and action gets taken at the full council, right? So last night, that was brought out of committee to have a discussion and voted on the full council or in the full council, and that did pass. There were some concerns that were brought up specifically by Councillor Palmucci about the areas in which this language says you can no longer operate an Airbnb. And one specific one was the caveat that says that if it's not owner occupied, that you can't operate an Airbnb. You know, the concern is, I think at this point, you know, any of these ordinances or things that are, we as a city council or any city council body before and after us have the ability to amend them, make changes, make adjustments as we go. And very similarly to this, you know, this is the first time we've had a regulation around, you know, I call it the Airbnb ordinance, but it's really the rental, you know, ordinance and language around that, the short-term rentals. And the thing that we have been seeing and that has been consistent is, you know, the concerns around safety and making sure that we know who is living in a certain area. Because again, I heard this from a couple of folks about, well, in my condo complex, there are X amount of people. And what if there's a fire and I don't know who lives here? And, you know, God forbid, we don't know, and somebody gets hurt. And so that's a concern that I've heard. We've heard from people who, you know, have dozens of people in one home where they're, you know, there shouldn't be that many folks and they're partying and they're doing things, you know, that are illegal, things that they shouldn't be doing. And how do we monitor that? And how do we make sure we're keeping up with that and regulating that? And so this was really important to make sure that we had that first step and making sure that we can try to start the ball rolling, getting something in place to regulate these so that those who are doing short-term rentals well and are setting a good example should be able to do them 100%, right? And those that aren't should not be able to do them anymore in the city. And so that's the fine balance that we needed to find last night. Again, it did pass as it was written with a 30-day notice to make sure that that's built in there for Inspectional Services Department to try to connect with those who are registered as having a short-term rental. Unfortunately, some people do this, most people do this and aren't registering anywhere. So it's really hard for us to see who actually is operating one and who isn't operating one. And again, this, I believe, ordinance is a step in that direction of saying, okay, let's try to work at creating an actual system so we know, again, who is operating one, what's the registration process look like, how can we make sure that those are doing it well can continue to do them, and those that aren't will then be pulled back and not be able to do them anymore. So that did finally come out of committee last night for a vote.
Okay. So how will that happen? Will you work with the online rental platforms to figure out who's using them in the city? You know, how will you find out?
That's part of this process. So now that we've implemented it, Inspectional Services Department will take it over at this point and work through the process on how we're going to find out who needs to register and who is currently registered, and just making sure that we're tracking all that information down and creating a database of our own, right? Mm-hmm. Again, this is one of those things that is new. And so because it is new, there are no, you know, systems that we can look back on to see what had been done previously. You know, we're certainly referencing other cities and towns and communities that have something like this in place, but just like anything else we approach, right, we don't ever want to do exactly what another city and town is doing. We want to maybe look at their best practices, but realistically, we need to do what's best within this city, right, and what works for Quincy. So again, you know, we moved on the ordinance, we can get the ball rolling on it, create some systems and see what works here in Quincy, and then make adjustments as we need to.
Okay, very good. Curious, the Father Heary Way motion, was that unanimous?
Yes, it passed.
Mm-hmm. It did pass. I'm
sorry, actually.
Because I know.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Yes, I'm sorry, there was one objection. There was one no on it, but okay. The rest of us voted yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, was that Councillor Palmucci? Because he was the one who objected to it.
Councillor Mahoney.
Oh, okay. All righty. I think that was it in the meeting end. Is that right?
I just want to remember because I almost missed the committee reports for you, Joe. I believe that was it.
Okay.
Yes. If I miss anything, I'm going to see you soon. So I'll be able to report it after that.
Nina, didn't know if you wanted to mention at all about I know there is a forum coming up in the city with regards to anti-Asian violence. And first of all, if you were involved in that and if you could explain what it is.
Yeah, so thank you for bringing that up. So some of the community partners that I've mentioned to you that helped with translation services and access for the senior vaccine clinic, they are a couple of the organizations that are involved in organizing this event. So it's, oh my goodness, I want to say from what I remember from looking at it this past week, probably about a dozen organizations coming together to organize this panel. And our very own, you know, again, ACDC, CORI, BCNC, they're part of this effort. And it's to make sure that we're having an open dialogue and hearing from folks about their experiences and what we can and should do moving forward to address this, right? I mean, the problem is, again, this isn't something that stopped and then started again, and now we're having the conversation about it. It's something that has continued to happen, and now we're seeing an uptick, you know, and there is, you know, a genuine concern in the community. I think, you know, I mentioned this to you the last time we spoke that, you know, getting calls from family members saying that they're afraid to go out and walk their dog at night, like that's not something you want to hear about a city you represent, right? Where you have loved ones saying, you know, well, what can I do, Nina? I don't feel safe going out at night, right? And that's not okay. And you know, there's at the end of the day, and these are conversations that I've had with folks, I can't go out there and change everyone's frame of thinking. I'm not trying to do, I can't look at you, Joe, and say, I'm going to change the way you are as a person, right? That's not the goal. I think the goal is let's hear from folks and their experience and their story so we can digest that individually, learn from that, and then identify individually what we can do in our daily lives to make sure that we're doing what we can to make sure everyone in the city feels safe, but then also collectively, what can we do to partner and share our resources to make sure that people feel safe here as well? And so, you know, my hope is that that's what this conversation is going to be on Thursday evening, is to hear from folks, hear from their experience. And then, I mean, it's pretty powerful to see, you know, a dozen organizations come together to say, we're sharing our resources to get behind this effort and see what we can do to try to make folks feel safe.
Yeah. When exactly is it, Nina, and how do folks participate?
So it's going to be this Thursday at... Let me see. I'm sorry, not this Thursday. I apologize. It's going to be Thursday the 25th at 6 p.m. And there is a Zoom link where folks can actually just click directly on that Zoom link to get into it. And they can find the information. It's all over social media right now through multiple platforms with those organizing organizations. And yep. So I can send you the link if you would like, and you can share that out as well. But I do encourage folks to log in and to tune in if they can.
Okay. Last time we talked, I remembered you'd mentioned the robberies that occurred on West Squantum Street. You might be aware that there has been two arrests, and it doesn't appear to be racially motivated, at least according to the investigators. Is that some consolation?
Of course. I mean, yes, of course. And that's something that, you know, that I spoke to the mayor and the chief, and it's something they both took and take very seriously, right? That it's, prior to the arrest, you know, there was no evidence from what they could see that it was, right? It looked like a crime of opportunity where they, you know, just grabbed the person and they ran with it. But both of them, in my independent conversations with them, both the mayor and the chief did say, however, if we find that it is, you know, motivated by race, we would charge them with a hate crime. It's unacceptable. And that was really reassuring to hear that that was going to be the lens that they had coming into finding this person and what they would do after the fact. And so, you know, hearing that it wasn't motivated by race, of course, you know, that is some comfort. But I think overall, regardless if you're Asian or not, right, in this community, if there is a robbery, it does, I think, heighten everyone's sense of concern, right? Is that everyone wants to make sure that if race isn't a motive, then somebody just robbed somebody as a crime of opportunity, right? And we want to make sure that people see that and find a way to still feel safe in this community, making sure that we're addressing that. So, you know, yes, it's kind of a yes and, right? Like, yes, it's great that it wasn't motivated by race, and we need to make sure that we are making our residents still feel safe, because we don't want people to get robbed walking our streets. So it doesn't mean that there isn't still work to do, Joe. There always is still work to do around safety here.
Sure. All righty. And before I let you go, Nina, happy early birthday.
Thank you. Yeah, I made a joke about that yesterday. Well, because Sheriff McDermott joined us, and every year he does an awesome St. Patrick's Day celebration. He just even before his time as sheriff, he always had an awesome St. Patrick's Day celebration. This year it was virtual. So Councillor Failing gave him a shout out for just joining us last night and tuning into the meeting. And so, but this is the problem, Joe. People all the time commiserate with Christmas babies. But let me tell you, if you grew up in Massachusetts with a birthday on St. Patrick's Day, nobody cares, right? It's always about St. Patrick's Day. So I needed to go in and poke a little bit yesterday when they mentioned it. But thank you. I appreciate it. It's 33. So time goes by very fast.
Oh, I never would have guessed in a million years.
Thank you. Hopefully you'll still be saying that in 20 years.
Well, you're going to have to change your name, at least on your birthday, to Nina Oliang.
I know. Right. Just for the day.
Exactly.
Just for tomorrow. Yeah.
Thanks so much, Nina. Great to talk to you as always.
Thank you. Talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Okay. Take care.
You too.